pals about cooking something up with me.
And good afternoon, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving. I'm Tom Hall. It's midday, and it's the 7th anniversary edition of the universally beloved What You Got Cooking pre-Thanksgiving special here on Midday. Thursday will mark the 3rd Thanksgiving with COVID hovering over the table. COVID infections and infections from other viruses are actually on the rise. The Maryland Department of Health reports 18 deaths from COVID-related disease, at least, in the last 24 hours. 23 people have been hospitalized in Maryland yesterday. But lots of people have been vaccinated and boosted against COVID, and life is a whole lot more normal than it was over the last 2 Thanksgiving days. Our mission here on Midday is simple. We've got 2 wonderful chefs at your disposal to share recipes and tips to help make your Thanksgiving dinner a delicious and memorable affair. Chef Damian Mosley is the creative force behind Black Sauce Kitchen, which you can find at the Waverly Farmers Market and at their storefront on 29th Street in Remington. Damian, welcome back. Happy Thanksgiving.
Tom, thanks for having me.
And John Shields is a chef and proprietor of Gertrude's Chesapeake Kitchen at the Baltimore Museum of Art. His latest book, as far as I know, is The New Chesapeake Kitchen. John, happy Thanksgiving to you.
Happy Thanksgiving, Tom.
Have you written a new one since?
No, I should have done that during COVID, but...
Such a slacker, you know. All right, we will also, a little bit later, check in with my mom to find out what she's bringing to Thanksgiving with my rotten nephew in South Carolina. Actually, I love my nephew. Whatever you love about Thanksgiving, we would love to hear about it. So what are your family food traditions? Which of the 6 million ways to make cranberry sauce will you choose tomorrow? Who's coming to your place, or whose place are you going to? Let's talk and let's share with each other the things that we love about Thanksgiving, culinary or otherwise. You can give us a call, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. You can tweet us, because as far as I know, Twitter still exists, @MiddayWIPR. So I'm really grateful to both of you for being here, because I know this is a very busy day. At Black Sauce, you've got folks picking stuff up that they've pre-ordered. What's on the menu for Black Sauce today?
Lots on the menu today. Of course, some turkey. We're doing cider braised turkey, smoked short ribs. These are all packed so that people can pick them up, but reheat them tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We're doing baked mac and cheese, collard greens. Our greens are vegan, cooked in coconut milk. And then, what's the last thing? We're doing, of course, biscuits. Of course, we're doing some dinner rolls. And then my favorite 2 things on the menu are brisket cornbread dressing. And we also did a smoked cranberry relish. So we smoked our cranberries before making them into cranberry sauce.
Talk about the dressing. How do you do a brisket cornbread dressing? That sounds unbelievably heavenly.
Well, I think key ingredient is making some really good cornbread first. So we did that over the weekend. Probably more cornbread than I've seen in many years. And then we smoked a couple of briskets, and once the briskets were cool overnight, we chopped them up, cubed them up into nice pieces, and crumbled the cornbread, folded in, of course, all of your aromatics, your shallots, onions, peppers, garlic, etc., celery, sage, thyme, and then we tossed all those things together with a nice, rich, smoky beef stock, and folded the brisket cubes in and baked that off.
Heaven. I'm in heaven, as the song says. My Lord, Damian, that sounds fantastic. And John, things are hopping at the BMA and at Gertrude's. Folks are picking stuff up both today and tomorrow even, right?
Yep. We got them coming all day long. They'll be going in that circle, riding around, picking them up. My partner John Gilligan will be in his turkey outfit, jumping up and down, handing out. And it's a tradition. And
so what's on the menu at Gertrude's for folks who are relying on you all to cook their Thanksgiving dinner for them?
Well, it's pretty traditional kinds of things. We brine turkeys, turkey breast, and so that with the gravy, stuffing, you know, that's made from brioche. We have mashed potatoes, cranberry sauce, candied sweet potatoes. And then you could get it with turkey, or you could get the ham dinner, and that's a baked ham. And then we also have a planked organic salmon. And but they all come with the same sides, and then you get a pie. You can have a apple pie that we do with a crumble. Doug Wetzel, our former pastry chef, his grandmother's recipe for her pumpkin pie, and then we have a chocolate bourbon pecan pie. So so there's a lot there for them to eat.
Yeah, indeed. Interesting you talk about mashed potatoes, because a publication called the Daily Meal did a survey, and they found that mashed potatoes are the one thing that people could easily do without at Thanksgiving. It was like the least popular thing. I actually make pretty good mashed potatoes. I'm very proud of myself with my mashed potatoes. if it's simple, I can handle it, you know. But Damien, is there a key to making a good mashed potato? What do you think the secret is? Because it could be that people don't like mashed potatoes because they get these lumpy, dried out, horrible mashed potatoes all the time.
I mean, that could be. Now, I'm going to start by saying mashed potatoes are not my forte, but I think the key to good mashed potatoes is actually the two things. I think salting the potatoes when you cook them is really critical. It's like too late to season them if you wait until they're done.
Put salt in the water.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the other thing, this might sound a little silly, but I think the gravy that you use to put on your potatoes really makes a good mashed potato.
Yeah, that's true. It's tough for it to stand by itself. But John, what do you think? Do you have a secret sauce or a secret recipe for mashed potatoes?
Well, I don't have a secret recipe, but I do have to take issue. I mean, I love mashed potatoes, and Thanksgiving, that usually is one of the centerpieces of and the rest of the stuff goes around it. It's always been pretty much a simple thing of, like a good, russet or a floury potato that I boil, always in salted water. You have to do it in salted water. And some milk or heavy cream or a combination of both, butter. Some people put sour cream in it, which is lovely. But I pretty much go for the milk and cream combination. And one of the things we were talking in the lobby here at WYPR with Antoinette, and she was talking about how she makes her potatoes, or when she's cooking them for it, is she cooks them whole in their jacket.
Huh.
And that's a great thing. I never did it 100%.
Even the big russet potatoes?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. And, I didn't realize until I was visiting relatives in Ireland that the entire country only cooks potatoes in the jacket.
Hmm.
Because if you peel them and cut it up, it absorbs so much water. And that's how you get those runny, kind of loose mashed potatoes. But when you cook it in the jacket and then peel off the skin and then mash it from there, you're going to get the best mashed potato, floury, beautiful, wonderful consistency.
That's great. See, I guess I'm an iconoclast, but I keep the skin on the potatoes when I mash them. And it works out fine. I don't know. It just adds a little color, and I throw maybe a little onion in it. I get chives in my garden. I throw lots of chives in there with some sour cream and stuff. And then I use the blender and everything and get them really smooth.
Yeah.
I mash them up and then get them really smooth. It seems to work. 410-662-8780. Let's hear about your Thanksgiving traditions. What do you like to cook? What do you like to eat? What do you have planned for tomorrow? Our email, midday@wypr.org. To tweet us, it's @midday WYPR. So I do want to ask you about the restaurant business, both of you guys. You've been in it for a while. We hear about supply chain issues. We hear about inflation. People are saying that Thanksgiving dinner is costing 20% more than it did even a year ago. Inflation is a global phenomenon. It's not, relegated to just the United States. But Damien, in your business, have you found, your expenses, really going up in terms of the food that you need to buy? And is it difficult hiring staff? We hear about all this stuff. We've been hearing about it for a while. Give us a status report.
So I feel like my costs are going up across the board. I might be unique in that I don't worry too much about paying staff. Like, the cost of living goes up, and I think if you want to keep good people around, you got to pay them. So that doesn't feel like a thorn as much as you get used to paying a certain price for certain food. And then when that, you know, you buy something 1 week and 2 weeks later, it's increased by $1.25 a pound. That's a really tough thing to stomach. And so I will say the one thing that softens the blow a little bit for me is trying to deal with folks locally, small vendors, because then you can have a conversation about why the cost has gone up, and you don't feel like you're getting robbed. You just feel like you're communicating about the difficulties of business. And then sometimes, of course, not every time, but sometimes I have to put that cost increase into, like, on our menu, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it eventually has to get passed on to the folks who are buying. And John, you know, you and I often meet at the Waverly Farmers Market, where Damien is every Saturday morning. Finding folks to be wait staff and to be kitchen personnel has been a challenge for a lot of folks for a long time now.
It really has been. I found that this quote-unquote post-COVID, as we trend downward, has been more difficult than actual pandemic itself, for finding people, for retaining people. And it's like Damien said, I'll pay them whatever, you know, because I want them to be paid well and want to come to work and want the job. But it's just been difficult finding anybody to even come in to have that conversation, number one.
And even worse now than at the height of the pandemic.
Yes, wow. Yes.
I wonder what causes that.
And so many people that, you know, that are in the business that I know have had, you know, similar experiences, and everybody said, where did they go?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that may have been an alien abduction. I'm not 100% sure, but yeah, it is big issue, and price increases are crazy. I mean, they're crazy. I mean, Damien, from his world, you know, whether we buy locally or whether we buy globally, it's a global market, mm-hmm. and the prices are set globally. Mm-hmm. So obviously, the war in the Ukraine has affected flour prices dramatically, and anything that associated with that. It also, because some of the seeds and the things that are fashioned into oils for food oil has gone sky high. I mean, sky high. You know, you can get like this drum of oil that would normally be 35. Now it's 95.
Wow.
I mean,
so it's that much. Yeah.
They're huge, huge price increases. And then we also have global warming and climate change. There's been so many crop failures now all over the country that romaine is $125 a case.
Mm-hmm.
So it's challenging, and it's like a moving target every day. You're never quite sure what's going to happen. So it keeps you on your toes, for sure.
Steve Ratner, who's an economist and used to be a government official in the Treasury Department, says that one of the reasons that turkeys are considerably more expensive is that there was an avian flu outbreak, and some 40 million turkeys perished with avian flu. And that's out of the 160 million turkeys worldwide. So we lost a chunk of turkeys as the supply went down, as well as drought. Drought has really affected so many farmers in so many places in the world. And Damien, the biscuits at Black Sauce Kitchen are legendary and deservedly so. I try to make it a point to have one literally every Saturday. and sometimes I get them in the sandwich. You make a sandwich mm-hmm. with various different things. Every week it's a different combination, which are incredible. But even just the plain biscuit, or a biscuit that you'll put some cheese and some herbs in. And when you talk about this, we've talked about this before, the ingredients are the key. I mean, that if you start with the right stuff, and also the way you put the butter into the flour.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess one of your vendors, at least at one point for the flour, was actually here in Ellicott City. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it was local, so that wouldn't be affected by the war in Ukraine. But that farmer's got to have a difficult time. That person, you know, making that flour is still going to have a difficult time with their supply chain issues. But talk about that supply chain issue in terms of this local relationship you have, as well as the particular technique of getting that butter incorporated into the flour.
Well, I'll actually start with that part first. I think interestingly enough, in terms of technique, pretty much the same two pairs of hands have been making biscuits since we've been in business. And so that makes for like, it makes for a lot of consistency. It makes for, it gives us it gives us the ability to kind of be flexible and react to changes. So if we have to change our flour, because I've made, 300,000 biscuits, I can kind of tell really quickly, like, oh, this is more absorbent flour. It's a little bit thirstier. I have to add a little bit more buttermilk during this stage, for example. So I think the technique is actually more important than the recipe. It's more important than, just about anything. The equipment that we use, because, we're in a new kitchen from, I guess last year we were in the same kitchen, but our oven has changed. We've had to make changes based on that as well.
When your other location had a fire.
Yeah.
And it took a long time to get the new place built up, and it's beautiful.
Yeah. A long time. Yeah. In terms of ingredients, absolutely we have to think about what do those changes mean for us? How do they impact our prices? How do they impact even how do they impact the technique a little bit? Like if we get butter that we've got to change butter, like one producer goes out of business and then now the percentage of fat in that butter is a little bit different, that changes the recipe just a little bit. Mm. So then we're really relying on that experienced hand to be able to adapt to those changes.
Yeah. But as you say, 300,000 biscuits later, you can probably figure it out.
Right.
Damien Mosley is the proprietor of Black Sauce Kitchen. It's easy to find at the Waverly Farmers Market. It's the place with the huge line coming out of it. They've also got a storefront and kitchen on 29th Street in Remington. John Shields is a chef and author of several cookbooks, including The New Chesapeake Kitchen. He's also the host of Coastal Cooking and Chesapeake Bay Cooking on Maryland Public Television and PBS. He is the proprietor of Gertrude's Restaurant at the Baltimore Museum of Art. We will take calls and comments when we come back from a quick break. 410-662-8780 to share your Thanksgiving memories, your Thanksgiving plans. Our email midday@wipr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayWIPR. And by the way, a reminder that the Y of Central Maryland's annual Turkey Trot Charity 5K is happening again tomorrow at several Y locations around the state. You can run it, you can walk it, you'll enjoy it either way, and you'll help the Y provide services to folks throughout Central Maryland. We've got a link to a sign up on our website, wipr.org/midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is 88.1 WIPR.
And welcome back. I'm Tom Hall. If you're just joining us today here on Midday, it's our pre-Thanksgiving edition of What You Got Cookin'. Chef John Shields of Gertrude's Chesapeake Kitchen and Chef Damien Mosley of Black Sauce Kitchen are here to take your questions and comments and to help you through any and all culinary quandaries you may have ahead of tomorrow's big celebration. To join us, we're at 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wipr.org. You can tweet us @MiddayWIPR. So Jimmy sends us an email, and he says, my brother and I had a process for a plate. We get the turkey, the peas, the stuffing, and the mashed potatoes. We cover it all in gravy, and we mix it all together into one beautiful thing and spoon it onto our dinner rolls, much to my mother and my sister's dismay. The mashed potatoes and gravy are the glue for this concoction, and I'm now well into my 30s, and I plan to disappoint my family by carrying on this tradition tomorrow. Well, Jimmy, I mean, presentation, I guess, not a strong suit for Jimmy. But that's, that's pretty good.
But it is good. I've done it.
It is good.
You mash all that stuff up and put it on a good dinner roll, life is good. I'm sorry.
And the good dinner roll by itself would be good, too.
Exactly.
I think of Mr. Hamlin over at the Avenue Bakery. Do you know him? He's a wonderful man. Jim Hamlin is his name. He opened this thing, 10 or 12 years ago. He has what he calls Popeye's roll, or Poppy's roll. Poppy, I think, is the name his grandchildren call him. Mm. And he makes these dinner rolls that are terrific. I mean, they're just excellent over at the Avenue Bakery. So if you're brand new to Thanksgiving dinner, John, what's the first thing you got to worry? In other words, if you haven't made one before, what's the first thing you got to worry about with the turkey? Give us some general rules about how to at least not screw up the turkey.
Well, you know, basically, number one, don't get too much turkey. You know, people go to the store and they think, oh, I should get a 28-pound turkey, 24-pound turkey, because I'm sure it's going to be, nah, that's not necessary. You know, generally, I would get a smaller bird, and if I were going to have more people, I'd do two. As opposed to
two smaller ones rather than one big one, than
a massive one. There's been a lot of controversy, you know, over do you brine, do you not brine? And I have found we've been brining at the restaurant, and it does keep it much more moist. I have found. One of the things when you're going to roast the turkey, make sure that you've brought it down to almost room temperature before you put it in the oven, because if you have it ice cold and you put it in, it's not going to roast properly. Some of the other things, health experts recommend not putting the stuffing in the turkey,
right?
Because there's been some, you know, bacterial outbreaks around that. And so we can take it from stuffing, as you said, to dressing and put it in a pan and bake it off. And there's so many different ways to do that. You know, you can have the cornbread stuffing, you can have a bread stuffing, or an oyster stuffing. And around the Chesapeake, that's another big tradition. But yeah, so, and you also, once the turkey is cooked, you want to let it rest for about 30 minutes, loosely covered in foil, before you start to slice it.
That's the thing. A lot of people can't resist that. I mean, it comes out of the oven and they just start carving away. And yeah, that you really do want to let it sit for a second or two to make sure that it's that it's ready to go. Speaking of ready to go, I understand that my mom is on the line, Rosemary Hall, who's in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Mom, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you as well, to your guests and to your listeners. Happy Thanksgiving. I'm on my way to Greenville to have Thanksgiving dinner with your nephew, my grandchild, Charlie, and his fiance. They are going to be married on New Year's Eve evening, and they're having us for Thanksgiving dinner. I think it's absolutely fantastic.
And I'm going to miss Thanksgiving dinner with you, as I have for most of the last 45 years or so. I will see you at the wedding. So what's your advice for Charlie and Erica, who are hosting their first big Thanksgiving, the big family Thanksgiving? You're there.
Well, when we first heard about it, the first thing that we said to them is, don't get stressed out. We're coming to eat food, drink wine, have fun, and be family and be together. So let's not make a Cecil B. DeMille production out of this one. Let's just have a good time. So I think we will. I'm just really looking forward to it. The pendulum swings, Tom. For so many years we were taking care of you all, and now you all are taking care of us.
It is kind of nice. Yeah, I miss the times that you were taking care of me. I'd like to sign up for another tour, if that's possible. and by the way, yeah. I want to give you a chance to give a shout out, because you got quite the family when it comes to grandkids and great grandkids. How many grandchildren do you have?
Well, we have 11 grandchildren, but they're all growing up to be young adults and they're getting married. So, you know, the numbers climb each year.
Yeah, because there's the grands, and then there's the spouses of the grands.
I great grandchildren. I have four now, but I'm going to get two in the new year, and this is exciting.
Yeah.
It's, you know, to think that I'm alive to see great grandchildren, it's a blessing.
Yeah, six great grandchildren, fantastic. And you turn, if you don't mind my telling everybody, you turn 91 in a couple of weeks. You're still as active as you've ever been. What are you bringing to Charlie and Erica's for Thanksgiving tomorrow?
Well, I'm making the dressing because Charlie is going to fry the turkey, so we can't stuff it. But I'm making a dressing, and then I've made a casserole of Brussels sprouts with some butternut squash, a little maple syrup, some pecans and cran raisins. That's very good. And then I made a little sort of dessert for those people that don't really care for pumpkin pie, and it's a brownie bit, which is sort of a half a brownie, that I topped with some cream cheese frosting, put a strawberry on top of it, made a little pom-pom on top of the strawberry, and looks like a Santa hat. It's a Food Network recipe that I stole from Miss Lee, and I just
Katie Lee.
It would be.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah. And they look, we have a picture of them that we're going to post on the website. They look pretty. They're really, they're like these little red Santa
do.
Hats.
They're,
yeah,
they do. Yeah.
Now, you grew up in a big Italian-American family.
I did.
Some were, you know, Italians who had come from the home country. And so Sunday dinner, growing up as a child in your childhood, was always a big affair. But was Thanksgiving even a bigger affair than Sunday dinner?
What was the menu
when you were growing up as a kid?
Well, I was raised in my grandparents' home, and Nana prepared everything. And keep in mind, she did this without a Cuisinart or a double oven or all of these fancy appliances that we have today. And she made ravioli, and my brother and I were given the fork, and we had to pinch the edges of it, carry them very carefully to the dining room and put them on a dining room table where they dried out overnight. None of us got ptomaine poisoning from having these ravioli that were filled with pork, beef.
Yeah, but you didn't put them in a refrigerator. You just put them on the dining room table.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right. But, you know, the dinners started out in early afternoon and didn't get over until late at night because we had so many courses. And after each course, my aunts would clear the tables. We didn't have dishwashers, so they washed the dishes, dried them. We reset the table. And it was just incredible. And once I grew up and left the nest and got married, and, you know, we moved around a lot every time we had Thanksgiving dinner. I tried to have friends over, and I tried to duplicate what my grandmother did. Never came close to it.
Yeah.
But I would ask these friends if they had a special dish that they liked to have for Thanksgiving dinner. One year, we had sauerkraut.
Yeah.
Because my friend was German, and sauerkraut was part of her diet, just like red wine was part of mine.
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, we're gonna let you go now because you've got a drive ahead of you. You and my brother Jim and his wife Julie are headed up to Greenville, South Carolina.
So we are.
Drive
we are.
Safely. Have a wonderful time, and I will see you at
Thank
the wedding.
You so
but give
much.
Our love to everybody. But happy Thanksgiving. Love you.
Happy Thanksgiving. Love you bunches. Bye bye.
That's Rosemary Hall, my mom in Atlanta, Georgia. And John, not only does my mom mention sauerkraut, but Mike has said, how can you have a conversation about Thanksgiving dinner here in Baltimore without mentioning sauerkraut? And this is, you've even got a way of preparing it for people who, like my mom, are a little bit shocked that sauerkraut would be part of a Thanksgiving Day menu. But it is a Baltimore thing, isn't it?
It is a thing. And every year, soon we get close to Thanksgiving, everybody calls me about the sauerkraut. That's kind of the go-to. But and listening to your mom, you know, I grew up on a street with mostly Irish, but when you went one block over, it was all Italians. And they were right from Italy. So I went to a number of Thanksgivings over there, and it was brought back so many memories when your mom was talking about that, because there were so many courses and so many wonderful things. So they did have the ravioli, they had the lasagna, they had kind of like a French toast, they had all kinds of things. Turkey then would be part of it. And
yeah, but turkey was always like part seven.
It was.
It just, you know, there was a whole preamble to turkey.
It was not the star of the show at all, but they would always bring out one pot of sauerkraut because it is Baltimore and you have to have the sauerkraut. I guess H.L. Mencken said there would be no respectful Baltimore family that does not have a crock of kraut brewing in the basement. And so, yeah, but Tom, like you were saying, a lot. There are some people that are a little resistant to sauerkraut. So I have this recipe that I like to use. It's called champagne, cabbage, and apples. So it sounds really fancy schmancy.
Doesn't sound like sauerkraut.
It doesn't, right. But it is. Yeah. So basically what you're doing is you get a fresh kraut. You know, I get a lot of stuff from Hex Ferments when we don't actually make it ourselves. And but I rinse it. I rinse it. And so it still has a little tang, but it takes a lot of the sour out of it. And so for this particular one, I'm just sauteing a lot of butter with bacon and garlic and ginger and apples. And
all good things.
And then like a cava or a dry champagne to braise it in there. And so when you're having it's a little bit like cabbage. It's a little krautish, but it's really smooth and it's delightful. You can eat it on its own. You could put some gravy on it. So it's sauerkraut light or softer, kinder sauerkraut kind of thing. But we are getting ready to do. We usually prepare about 500 pounds or 600 pounds of cabbage, usually from one straw farm, to make our own kraut. We do that the first week of December to get ready for Kraut Fest, which is in January, Gertrude's for two nights.
John Shields of Gertrude's Restaurant at the BMA. Damian Mosley is here. He is the head of Black Sauce Kitchen. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. To tweet us, it's @MiddayWIPR. Let's go to the phone to Aaron, who's on the line in Baltimore. Aaron, you want to talk about smoking a turkey, I guess, huh?
Yeah, so smoking a turkey is a lot like roasting a turkey, except you generally want to have a lower temperature. You want to have woods that are going to deal well with the meat. And turkey doesn't have a really strong flavor. But it turns out that if you use a ratio of about 3-1 for hickory to mesquite, it comes out really well. Another thing to be aware of is that the breast of the turkey gets dry a lot faster than the dark meat does. So what I do is I separate the skin from the flesh before I stick it on the smoker, and I rub it down with a compound margarine that I mix up before I stick it on there, and that tends to keep everything moist all the way until people are eating it.
All right, great. Well, thank you for those tips, Aaron. I appreciate it. And Damien, I mean, how does that strike you, Aaron's suggestions for smoking? You smoke all sorts of stuff, not just turkeys, right?
All sorts of stuff. I mean, sounds like he's got it pretty dialed in. I've never used margarine, and I would say that I typically use different wood than that. I like applewood a little bit better, and then therefore I like to put a little bit of cider in my brine so that I can try to coax that flavor into the turkey in a couple of different ways. But I like what Aaron had to say about it.
We have, before we go to a break, we have an email from Stephanie who wants to comment on the email we got from Jimmy about putting all that stuff together and mixing it all up in a glop. I mean, that's my term, not Jimmy's, and putting it on the roll. He says, in contrast to that guy, I rotate my plate and I eat one item at a time. And she says, I eat all my meals that way. I start with my veggie, then the carb, then the meat, and then the roll. And why I started eating like that many years ago, I heard or read something about eating foods according to density is easier for the digestive system to handle, and I've been doing it ever since. So I'd never heard of that. And I would never do that. I would never just like eat all the mashed potatoes and then move and eat all the cranberry sauce and then eat all the turkey. But, you know, Stephanie, if it works for you, you got to go for it. That's how this works. We're going to take a quick break, and we will come back. It's What You Got Cooking, our pre-Thanksgiving special edition with Chef John Shields of Gertrude's Chesapeake Kitchen and Chef Damian Mosley of Black Sauce Kitchen. To join us when we come back, 410-662-8780, our email midday at WIPR.org, and you can tweet us at midday WIPR. Stay with us.
This is 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. If you're just joining us, it's the What You Got Cooking Thanksgiving Special Edition. Chef John Shields of Gertrude's Chesapeake Kitchen at the BMA is here. Chef Damian Mosley of Black Sauce Kitchen. They have a storefront on 29th Street. You can catch them at the Farmers Market in Waverly on Saturday mornings. We'd love to hear from you. What are your traditions? What are the things you're looking forward to tomorrow the most? 410-662-8780. Our email, midday at WIPR.org. Our Twitter handle is at midday. WIPR. So, Damian, one of the reasons I love talking to you and to John and to people who are, you know, serious about food is that you're very tuned into the emotional connection between the act of having a meal and what you're preparing for people. I wonder, when you grew up, I know you came here from Brooklyn. Did you grow up in Brooklyn as a kid?
I actually grew up in Virginia.
Mm-hmm. And I just can't imagine that the traditions and the smells and the tastes and the emotional connection to food that you developed as a child have it totally informed your work as a professional chef.
Definitely. And I have to say that I wasn't as attuned to what my mom and my grandmother and my aunts were doing in the kitchen when they were doing it at the time. So it's amazing how I have this sort of, I think we all have this sort of sensory memory that when you're trying to recreate something, you can smell something and say, oh, I'm almost there. Or the texture of something in your fingers. It's like, oh, this feels like what I was eating in the 1980s or the 1970s or whatever it is. Even without that written down recipe, even without that YouTube video of your mom or whoever doing food. I just think that sensory connection to it is something that I thrive on. And then lastly, I would say in a kitchen full of really good cooks, I've noticed that we often go about it differently. You know, like I've got, you know, Michael in the kitchen tastes everything when he's making it, everything. And I'm much more of a visual cook. Like, does this have exactly the same color it had the last time at this stage of the cooking process, you know? We all kind of use those senses differently.
Yeah, that's interesting. And of course, John, your restaurant, Gertrude's, is named after, you know, is it your grandmother,
my
right?
My grandmother, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. So that brings so many memories into just about everything, you know, that I do, really, really. And it was interesting, you know, when I opened a restaurant in Berkeley, California in 1983 called Gertie's Chesapeake Bay Cafe. And it was because I missed the cooking and the flavors and the taste of where I grew up. And I remember sometime around then, this was a good life lesson. I also had a French restaurant, and I came back for the first time to Baltimore and was going to make the Thanksgiving dinner. So I got all the fancy stuff out. I hauled out things that no one had ever seen. And I worked like a dog, and they hated it. And so the thing that I tell people over and over again when they're trying to struggle with what to make, remember what talks to you, what speaks to you, mm-hmm. because I really feel when I use my grandmother's recipes and that kind of thing, she's with me. And I also believe that when we bring these recipes to the table with our family, then all of our ancestors are with us and we're tasting and eating those same things and they connect us. And it is miraculous what food can do.
Yeah, it's great. I grew up, I'm the oldest of five boys. And our house always had more than seven people for dinner when we were kids because one of us or two of us or three of us would have a friend over. Mm-hmm. Hey, Mom, can so-and-so stay for dinner? And so the answer was always yes. And my mom just made this, you know, tons of food, but also always tried to, you know, present it nicely, always had stuff on the table. We had this big, gigantic, round kitchen table that we ate at the kitchen. They had to buy it from a restaurant supply store because they needed one big enough for all of it. And there were, I mean, just every night she's cooking for 9 or 12 or 14 people. I mean, it was never just us. And I'm just so grateful to her for so many things. Speaking of Berkeley, John, we have a caller, John, who's on the line from San Francisco. John, happy Thanksgiving. Welcome to the show.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone there.
So you want to talk about one of my favorite subjects, which is cranberry sauce. Love the stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was just wondering if anybody had any different takes on it or anything. It seems like something that people love or hate. And I make one that my mom made that it's a little bit more of a cranberry chutney. I'm just wondering if everybody else just sticks to the regular or what.
So, Damien, you have on your current menu some cranberry sauce that you do by smoking the cranberries. That's interesting.
Right. I smoke the cranberries at a really low temperature for about an hour and 10 minutes. I just was trying to get that wood flavor into them. And then we really kind of quickly cook the cranberries with sugar, a bunch of zest from limes, and this time we used clementines, and then a bunch of like really savory wintery spices. And so we put a little acid in it to finish it. And I try, one thing for me is very important, no matter what flavors you're putting in the cranberry sauce, and this is just my preference, I really still like to be able to see cranberries in it. I don't like to see
me too.
A mush or the shape and ridges of a can, for example. I like to see the cranberries in it. And so a lot of that is just timing. You know?
And just to clarify, when you say you put some acid in it, I assume you're not talking about LSD. I mean, what do you put in
it? It depends, vinegar or citrus, uh-huh. or some of both. Mm-hmm.
And John, I make one, and I think I got it off of some package somewhere. A friend of mine in Ithaca, New York, made it years ago, and I've always made it. It's got horseradish and mustard in it, as well as some brown sugar and some regular sugar. You cook the cranberries, you just sort of soften them up. But as you say, Damien, you can see them, and mm-hmm. it's thick. And then horseradish and mustard, it's terrific. So, John, in California, when you say you make it kind of as a chutney, how do you do it?
It's a little similar to what you just said. It has Dijon mustard in it, and it's got salt and pepper, and it's made from the whole cranberries and some orange juice and orange zest, and obviously sugar. And so it doesn't, even though it has a teaspoon or so of Dijon in it, you know, it doesn't taste like mustard, but it's just got like a little bit of that kind of aftertaste to it. It's good, but it's not that sweet.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's great. That's a good idea. And John Shields, cranberry sauce is another one of those controversial ones. There are people who don't like it. And there was a poll that they took about a year ago or something saying that more than half of Americans, and this speaks ill of us, prefer the stuff in the can. The cranberry, and that's, you know, when we talk about the political polarity and all the problems there, I think that's a problem. That 58% of Americans like the stuff in the can. And, you know, I was at the grocery store the other day, and I saw a whole special shelf at the end of the aisle and everything of the canned cranberry. I guess people, you grow up with it maybe, and you can't let it go?
Yeah, I think that's what it is. You know, so many people, especially like in the 1950s and the 60s, this was like a new thing. Mm-hmm. This was like progress. Oh, you could get the cranberry sauce in the can. You just comes out and it slides out of there. And It's somewhere between jelly and a jello mold and cranberries all rolled into one. So I guess it's stuck.
Evidently. We have an email from John, who's in Thurmont, Maryland. I want to give a shout out to my mother-in-law, who carried out her restaurant owner father's tradition of, quote, drawing the poisons out of the turkey by leaving it in the sink with salt overnight and changing the water twice. It never killed us, which is kind of a low bar, you know, from John, you know, but, you know, but brining gone wild is what John said. So I don't know. How does that strike you, Damien? I mean, it scares me. It just frightens me on a certain level, you know?
I mean, in some ways it's similar to a brine, but I would want to be doing this up in, like, Massachusetts or Maine somewhere, and I would want the sink to be outside so it's refrigerated temperatures, you know?
Exactly. Well, Damien Mosley is the animating force behind Black Sauce Kitchen. They got a storefront on 29th Street. You can catch them at the Waverly Farmers Market on Saturday mornings. Thank you, sir. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
And John Shields of Gertrude's Chesapeake Kitchen, terrific restaurant at the Baltimore Museum of Art. Happy Thanksgiving, sir. I appreciate it.
Well, happy Thanksgiving to you, Tom.
And Here and Now is up next after the news. Tomorrow at this hour, we'll bring you an extra hour of Here and Now. And on Friday, we'll listen to my conversation with Stan Stovall of WBAL Television. His last broadcast is tonight, and on Friday, Stan will reflect on his more than 50 years in TV news. And before we leave you today, a few words of thanks in this season of Thanksgiving. I am thankful for the team that I work with here at Midday, our producers, Taria Rogers, Rob Sivak, and Mallory Pinkard-Pierre, our director and engineer, Shania Mapson, our director of operations, Luke Spicknell, and Austin Coghlan at Clean Cuts. He writes our theme music. Thanks also to our chief engineer, Ray Heppner, to WIPR's executive director for news, Danielle Irby, my colleagues on the WIPR news team, and my colleagues and good friends, Aaron Henkin, Matt Taka, and Nathan Sterner. I'm also thankful and grateful to our talented friends at WTMD and our news partners at the Baltimore Banner. And I appreciate you, your questions, your comments, your perspective, and your concern for the future of our city, our state, our country, our world. Your engagement with the issues and your openness to the panoply of ideas that we try to bring you each day is an inspiration. So thank you for being part of the Midday community of listeners. Every day, our team cherishes the opportunity that you let us have to help shape in our small way the public conversation about our democracy, the challenges we face, and the things that enliven and illuminate our lives. That opportunity is a blessing and a gift. You are a blessing and a gift. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks from all of us at WIPR. We wish you and yours a very happy Thanksgiving.
This is 88.1 WIPR.